This is Taylor calling in for a sound check.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me on this one?
I can, yes. Hello.
Alrighty. And the second testifier mic?
That one's good.
ABC 1, 2, 3.
ESP, loud and clear.
Mic check 1, 2, 3.
That one's good.
Chairs, mic 1, 2, 3.
Chair is great.
Mic check 1, 2, 1, 2.
That one's all set.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2.
That one's good.
Last mic.
And I can hear you just fine, loud and clear.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Bye.
Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 11th. Let the record reflect the time is 1:30 p.m. Today we have Vice Chair Senator Reinbold and Senator Keel and myself, Chair Hughes. And Senator Machicki is finishing up another meeting to hear students from his school district, and Senator Schauer is excused. Please silence your cell phones, and thank you for those that are helping us with the committee today. Well, originally, as you may know, we were to have two items on today's agenda. We will now just have one, Senate Bill 41, which is the short title, Number of Superior Court Judges. And today, Ms. Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, will introduce the bill and walk us through it. And once committee members have had their question answered, we will open public testimony. It's my intention to hold this bill so the committee members have a chance to consider it, and we will bring it back at a later date. So come on up, Nancy. Join us at the table. And as you know what to do, I don't need to instruct you to place your name on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. I want to thank Chairman Hughes and the committee for hearing this bill today. This is a little bit of an unusual bill in that you're used to bills sponsored by members of the legislature or by the governor. And you will see at the top of this bill, it's rules by request, and that is usually by request to the governor, but this one, unusually, is by request to the court system. We had one like this last year, and I believe those members might recall that, and this is on the same topic. So the only thing that this bill does is increase the allotted number of Superior Court judges by two and specifies that the two additional seats will be in the third judicial district. With this bill, to be more precise, the court system would be able to take two already existing district court judgeships, one in Homer and one in Valdez, and convert those seats into Superior Court seats. And I'll talk about why that makes sense to the Supreme Court in just a moment. And I talked a little bit about some of this at my last presentation a week or two ago. What I'd like to do is tell you what we have in those courts now, why the timing for this is appropriate, and then talk a little bit more specifically about the Homer and Valdez judicial resources and alternatives we've considered before coming to the legislature with this request. So what we have now is, in Homer and Valdez, the last two remaining single, the only court locations that are single judge locations where the judge is not a Superior Court judge. Those are both district court judges, and this bill would change that. So as we talked about before, Superior Court judges have general jurisdiction. They can do everything. Any trial court case that's brought can be handled by a Superior Court judge, whether it's a felony, domestic relations like divorce, child in need of aid, probate matters such as a mental commitment, et cetera, those can all be handled by a superior court judge. But a district court judge, so again, this is who is sitting currently in both Valdez and Homer, have only limited jurisdiction. They can't handle child in need of aid or felonies. They handle misdemeanors and cases with less than $100,000 in controversy, et cetera. They also do handle domestic violence petitions, by the way. But it's really because a superior court judge can do everything, and having those superior court judges in place instead would allow a lot more flexibility that we're seeking this change. Right now, the timing for the change is also ideal. The current district court judge in Valdez has left that position. He was actually appointed by the governor to become the new Juneau Superior Court judge, and so that position is currently vacant. And in Homer, the long-serving district court judge appointed in 2005, it has just announced her retirement, effective at the end of this fiscal year. So the hope for the Supreme Court is to advertise those two openings as Superior Court judges instead of district court judges. And if this bill passes this year, that's what we'll do. And if it doesn't, we will continue with what we've had in those courts. Okay, what have we had? Well, in Homer, coverage in Homer has been a bit problematic for years. All the Superior Court filings in Homer, and there have been an average of over 300 a year, have been handled by Kenai judges traveling down to Homer to resolve those cases. That is working, but it probably is not the most efficient way for us to use our resources. A Kenai judge has traveled to Homer more than 35 times over the last 2 years. Their default schedule, in fact, is to cover Homer 1 week a month to handle those cases, and that often changes depending on caseloads. For example, if there's an emergency in a child in need of aid case or something, the Kenai judge has to travel down even if it wasn't planned. So every time there's a felony filed in the Homer region, whether it's a child in need of aid, a divorce case with anchor point people, an elder in Seldovia that may need a guardianship, that Kenai judge is traveling down there to handle it. And not only does it cost money, obviously, for that travel, but also the time away from the bench for that Kenai judge. And at this point, we happen to have three relatively new Kenai Superior Court judges just because of natural retirements in the past year or so. The three Kenai judges are quite new, and we're seeing this as a great opportunity to fix the sort of problematic coverage we've had down in Homer. And without the legislation, though, again, we would continue to just to have the district court judge cover the district court cases, but we want to try to fix the problem now. Valdez has a kind of a different sort of problem. What we've had there is the one district court judge serving in Valdez, but that judge has also, as it happens, taken special appointments to do superior court cases. So for a number of years, that judge, who has a lot of experience, has been appointed by the Supreme Court to handle some superior court matters. And that person, because of the individual involved, has covered superior court cases from Glen Allen, Cordova, Valdez, and other areas as well, sometimes even filling in for Palmer judges. If, for example, a Palmer judge has a long criminal case, that Valdez district court judge would get a special appointment to handle, for example, the child in need of aid cases in Palmer. Well, that person left, got somewhat rewarded, is now a superior court judge with the full name and benefits of a superior court judge. But if we continue, unless we make this change, we'll have a new district court judge in Valdez who may not have the experience and ability and willingness, frankly, to travel to other courts and cover the superior court cases. So that is why we want the change to happen there. I also want to say that the court has considered alternatives. One of the main things that they've done to facilitate the issues with superior court case coverage is to encourage and in some cases actually require video conferencing for a lot of the proceedings. For example, the Kenai judge has a video link now to the Homer courtroom and can handle some things that way, but everything can't be handled that way. If somebody's going to have their parental rights to their child terminated, presented and witnesses are presented, for example, it may be that the judge needs to be in the courtroom. So although our travel costs have decreased, they can't be eliminated because there's just a lot of times the judge has to be in that same room with the other folks. So video conferencing has helped alleviate the problem, but has not relieved the problem wholly. And we've thought about just asking for a brand new judge, but that is a very expensive fix. You, with the judge often comes capital costs for a courtroom and an office. And with this situation, we will be able to substitute the Superior Court judge to literally use the same chair, the same computer, the same courtroom, and the same resources as the pre-existing, currently existing, district court judge has used. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you again for listening to the Supreme Court's request.
Ms. Mead, I think I heard you say that these were the last two holdouts as far as single judge locations where they are district rather than superior. Is that correct? And have we been purposely trying to gradually replace the single judge locations with superior court judges so that they could handle all cases? Or
To the chair, we have had district court judges in those two locations actually for a good number of years. They have been the sole courts without a superior court judge for a good number of years. Sitka, I think, was the last one to change over to superior court. But we do have a number of single court locations that have the superior court, generally the second district, Nome, Utqiagvik, Kotzebue, and Sitka in the first district. So we do have a number of them, Dillingham in the third district, that just have one judge. But again, those are all superior court judges, and it just gives us much more flexibility in terms of coverage to have that person available.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Mead, so you gave us the superior court filing load in Homer at about 300 a year. What was it in Valdez? Ballpark.
It's fewer than 100. I think the ballpark is about 200. And the thing is that even though that would be a fairly low number compared to other courts for the Superior Court judge to cover, that Superior Court judge would also be covering all the district court filings in Valdez and Glen Allen as well, and in Cordova. And that person, the filing numbers in Valdez don't tell the whole story. For that person who would be assigned to be the Superior Court judge in Valdez would also provide the court system greater flexibility in all sorts of coverage. For example, we've talked about the fact that in some of the other rural outlying courts, such as Sandpoint and Unalaska, we currently have Anchorage judges assigned to cover their superior court cases. And if we didn't have to do this, because that new position in Valdez could have the time to cover some of those things, that would be helpful to the court. And if that new Superior Court judge in Valdez had time, he or she could cover, for example, alleviate some of the pressure on the Palmer Court, which is also quite a busy court with a high filing statistics.
Follow-up, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thinking through the other possibilities, there are also court locations that don't have a judge, they have a magistrate. What would be... And you've probably thought this through, but maybe you could walk me through it. What would be the effectiveness of adding a magistrate to handle the low-level stuff that takes a lot of time and continuing a district court judge on special appointments to handle the superior court load?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, you are right that has been thought through. The problem with coverage is at the higher end, I guess you'd say, with the felonies and the child in need of aid cases, whereas... we're doing okay with covering the minor offenses and the lower level cases in the district court. So the place that the pressure needs to be relieved is at the top end. So as I was saying in Valdez, this judge, who's a district court judge, has been handling cases, I guess you'd say, above his or her literal jurisdiction, although it's been perfectly fine because there's a rule that allowed those appointments. And that's the space where we need help. And that person... the next one might not be able to do that, the next one appointed, and that would leave that gap of those couple hundred cases that didn't have appropriate authority to handle the matters.
Thank you.
Senator Reinbold.
Nancy, thank you. Did a great job. I've heard this before last year, and I'm very supportive overall. So this is just due diligence question. Can a magistrate help in any way down there? Or, I mean, obviously this is a great idea, but I'm just asking the question for due diligence.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, that is an excellent question. And we do have magistrate judges in some of these areas. We have a magistrate judge in Cordova, and Cordova needs a magistrate judge because there are an awful lot of fishing violations there, minor offense violations. So that is a help. In Valdez, we now have a half-time traveling magistrate judge, half-time in Valdez and half-time in Glen Allen. Glen Allen has a lot of magistrate judge work because there's a lot of traffic cases there and a lot of hunting violations. So the magistrate judges generally handle those minor offenses, things that come in on citations, tickets. In some instances, they can handle misdemeanors, but only if all the parties accept that as jurisdiction. So the magistrate judges do help handle, alleviate some of the pressure at on the lower end cases, and we do use those, sometimes traveling and sometimes full-time in those locations.
Senator Reinbold?
Just to follow up, and with crime, I know it's hit primarily, you know, the Anchorage area, but it's going south. With these judges, I'm trying to remember their jurisdiction. Would they be able to handle the crime issues as well?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, yes. A superior court judge can handle everything, including the felonies. So there could be a felony trial anywhere in the 3rd District handled by both of these judges. And they could certainly handle the misdemeanors, which are generally district judge matters. But again, these two appointed judges would be handling district court matters as well.
And for clarification, a district court judge cannot handle felonies, is that correct?
To the chair, that is correct. That is above their jurisdiction.
Okay, thank you. Can you, the fiscal note seems pretty reasonable for what we're doing, if definitely, and appreciate the bringing in the travel costs, but could you tell us what the difference is between salary and benefits for a district judge versus a superior court judge, please?
Yes. The difference between a district court judge and a superior court judge in locations that don't have a cost of living adjustment, at least on their base salary, I will say, is about $35,000 for one, and that is salary plus benefits difference. And because it's about 35.5 or 35.6, this is two positions, and then so that brings you to about 71 or 72, and we're netting back the average travel cost that we've seen because of this lack of a superior court judge to get to the fiscal note total of $62,000.
So the difference is $35,000 salary and benefit difference for two. So what is the base salary for a district court judge, and what is the base salary for a superior court judge? And I'm assuming benefit packages are similar for both, and what would that be approximately?
The district court judge base salary is $160,848, and a superior court judge salary is $189,720.
And that's salary, so it doesn't include benefits. Do you know roughly what the
benefits amount to? We say for really any employee is almost a third of their salary. So that would bring the benefits up to about $41,000.
Okay. Thank you. I have another question, just because I'm aware that the administration is wanting to increase the video conference opportunity, and I believe even is including that in some of the legislation. And you made reference to the Kenai, a superior court judge, having to travel to Homer, but sometimes it can be taken care of with video conferencing, but sometimes that's not a good idea. And you mentioned there might be multiple witnesses. When is it necessary for a judge to be in the room as opposed to by video conference?
To the chair, we do have several rules with respect to when a criminal defendant sometimes may opt not to be in the room and sometimes shall be in a room, depending on certain actually constitutional and due process issues. But just generally, in criminal matters, a criminal defendant has the right to, under the Constitution, to be there whenever there is evidence presented against them. That's a very kind of general thing. So certainly for any trial and for other matters, hearings where there may be witnesses and evidence presented against him or her. So that's when certainly the defendant in a criminal case would be able to be at the be in the presence, physical presence of the other parties to the case, including the judge. Your question actually incorporates also just when a judge might want to see what's going on in a civil case or in any type of case. That is, it's not a clean line. The judges will use their discretion in determining how much assessing of witnesses and courtroom demeanor they need to do in order to come to a just decision in a case. The examples I gave were child in need of aid cases. As grave a situation as some of those are, and they're very serious things for a judge to decide, he or she is probably going to want to be there. It's a crowded courtroom with, you know, grandparents, all sorts of people, and very likely the court would feel like it was respectful for the parties in some ways and to give them a much better picture if they were present in the courtroom. Sometimes even for child custody cases, the judge might feel, I need to be there if I want to see this 16-year-old child testify and see, be able to assess the veracity of what's going on with witnesses. I would want to be there. Now, there are routine hearings. Trial setting conferences are things where the judge is much more likely to feel that it isn't necessary to be physically present in the room.
So the judge, in summary, has discretion over a number of these cases, particularly civil, but if it's a criminal, if evidence is being presented or witnesses are going to be present or, you know, part of the proceedings, then it's required that it be in person. Is that correct?
To the chair, I may not be I'll need to look that up. I know there are criminal rules about when certain proceedings shall be by video, and then there's discretion as to other things. And I can look that up and get back to you. But that's a very, very generally what you said is correct, but it might not be precise. It's
okay.
Correct, but close.
Thank you. Senator Michiki joined just a few moments ago for the record. And if there are other questions, we'll entertain them. Otherwise, I was going to ask Ms. Mead if she kind of summarized the bill for Senator Michiki's sake, just in case he has a question, unless if he knows already he has one.
I'm okay.
Senator Keel, did you go ahead, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Mead, we talked a little bit about the judges and their caseloads. Can you talk to us a little bit about the support staff and how that varies? Same number of clerks in court, I think, but back in chambers, I think Superior Court judges, because of the weight of the matters, usually have more staff. How does that – I don't see them in the fiscal note.
To the chair, Senator Keel, we tried to keep our fiscal note as narrow as possible or as small as possible, frankly, and not create new positions. In Valdez, there's already a half-time clerk, and that half-time clerk fills in as an in-court clerk, and that would continue to occur. If we needed more in-court clerk resources, that is the clerk who sits in a courtroom and keeps log notes and records and moves the papers around, we would be able to move them from some other locations. In Homer, there are three or at least two and a half clerical staff. They do act as the in-court clerk, too. I'm not sure if you are actually referring to law clerks. District court judges typically don't have a law clerk, and superior court judges typically do. So you are correct. We aren't seeking a law clerk for these two superior court judge seats. And the reason for that is we think we can use resources from other locations to fill in for that. Clearly, like here, most people communicate by email, and if that new superior court judge needs law clerk assistance, we have law clerks from other areas who would be made available for that. I mean, frankly, in these budget times, we're having to change our traditions of always having a law clerk for every single judge. There's already a superior court judge in Ketchikan who doesn't have a law clerk and in Anchorage. So we're really just trying to be flexible and using the pitch in and share resources model because of the budget constraints.
Just a follow-up.
Senator Keel.
So would you envision the law clerk resources then coming from some of the other courts that were providing support like Kenai, or would they come out of the Anchorage courthouse, courts? Where would, what's the vision there?
To the chair, Senator Keel. To start with, we would likely use the Kenai law clerks, just because, as you point out, those judges have already been covering Homer. And those law clerks have been working on some of those cases. In Valdez, the district court judge who's been doing the Superior Court matters has actually done it mostly without a law clerk. When needed, can call upon a law clerk, usually from Palmer. But the way things work with a lot of the single-judge locations is a little bit just geared towards the circumstances. Literally, an email might go to the presiding judge saying, for the next month, I'm going to need some law clerk resources, and the presiding judge sends something out, and it could be the law clerk from Dillingham or Kodiak who happens to have some time during that period to assist. So it's flexible. Everyone thinks, though, that it should be able to work.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll just comment. I appreciate the court system. The court system really took the lead as our fiscal situation changed, and being very innovative and trying to take a new approach, and we appreciate that. Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for my own clarity, and you may have covered this, so the difference in the personal services is likely around $35,500 each for the upgrade from district to Superior Court judge, for a total of $71,000, and you have the offset of $9,000 for a fiscal note of $62,000 per year. But are there other efficiencies with all of the moving back and forth that can also reduce the cost for this position? It seems like you only took the hard numbers, but with the strain on going back and forth and covering from Kenai, as well as with the Valdez positions, it seems like there would be other hard costs that could be captured.
Through the chair to Senator Michiki, we estimated the hard costs. That $9,000 that we netted back out, subtracted, I guess is a better word, from the increase in salary and benefits, includes not just hard travel costs, because they've been as high as $12,000 over the last couple of years, but our anticipation that is an accurate savings we'll see from the lack of travel. We don't see savings when, for example, our fiscal office has to write 15 fewer reimbursements checks. That's a savings in our time, but we don't see a monetary savings from that. But that $9,000, we also, although it's been higher some years, we're thinking, well, even more things are just going to be done by video conference. That's our best guess at the actual savings that we'll get.
Madam Chair.
Senator Michiki.
I guess I was thinking more on the efficiencies of someone not sitting in pretrial longer, because your caseload would not be as backlogged with the upgrade and things like that. Is there any benefits such as those?
Through the chair to Senator Michiki, I don't want to say that these changes will make any difference in the speed in which cases are processed. This is not an attempt to move cases faster. This is just a change in the way we internally provide a judicial resource to handle those cases. I don't think it will mean that anything will be faster or better handled. It's just a different way of handling it. So I don't want to leave that impression.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions from committee members? Senator, I almost called you Senator Mead. Ms. Mead.
Got promoted.
Would you kind of just make a wrap-up of what the bill does as we close, please?
Thank you to the chair, members of the committee. This bill has two sections. The first section simply changes the statute that sets the exact number of Superior Court judges from 43 to 45. That will give the court system we will fill those seats with Superior Court judges. Those seats are vacant now, so the timing is excellent, and it gives us the opportunity to increase the way we process cases in the entire Third Judicial District by having this more flexible way of covering cases. And with that, I appreciate your listening.
And thank you. And because Senator Michicki had an important meeting he was attending, and I think this would be important to him, one of the clarifications that Ms. Mead made was that Superior Court judges can handle felonies and district judges can't. So important in these one-judge locations to have Superior Court judges. So thank you very much. And I'm now going to open public testimony. And I am not seeing anyone listed through the LAOs or off-net at this point. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify regarding SB 41? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. So with that, if there are no other member comments or questions from the committee members, so I don't see any, we will wrap up. That concludes our business. We will meet again on Wednesday, February 13th, to begin work on two bills dealing with sex offenses, Senate Bill 12 from Senator Michicki and Senate Bill 35 introduced from the governor. So seeing no other business before the committee, we shall adjourn at 2 p.m.